Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to 2018 to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron alongside the lovely Jenny Hubby.
Hi, everybody.
Hey. So hi. We are starting the year ground running. Folks, we have a fantastic guest on our show today who is in the film industry. And oftentimes we have coaches on the show. We've had coaches on the show out of LA, New York, Atlanta, that were involved in the TV and film industry, that were creative coaches, helping more or less folks that are actors, be in role and facilitate them as a coach with their role in their acting career. Today, we have a fascinating angle that we just don't. This is our first time to have a producer, director on the show. And so I think this is going to be highly instructive for our listeners because we're going to get to hear from a producer, director, some of the things that they use for their creativity, as well as maybe some things that they might like from their cast that they're working with. So I'd like to introduce, without further ado, Vitaly Versace. How's it going?
Good afternoon, Bruce and Jenny. Thank you for having me on your show. It's a beautiful day and a good start for this year. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on. I know, boy, you've been busy. You have several releases coming out, and we'll get to your new releases in a little bit. But if you could kind of tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. I know after reading your bio, you coming up in Mid-America and having some experience in Mid-America, and you've worked a variety of very humbling positions, and you've worked your way up. So if you could kind of give us a little bio about yourself.
Well, I moved as a teenager from Russia to Cleveland, Ohio, and my grandparents, everybody lives in the around Cleveland area. My nephews, my cousins, my uncles, I have like over 100 family members just in like Cleveland area. How I started this, I lived in 2006 in Los Angeles, and I was working in 2005-2006, I started developing a team of, I wanted to get a team of a crew that we could work together, and that's when I started. I think I was on the Warner Brothers lot, and I met with a couple people, and I was offering them, trying to pitch my first film that I was directing at that time. I was trying to direct it, and I was getting crazy prices, like, hey, I charge $800 an hour and this and this, and it was a low the SAG budget films, it's very $800. You can't afford an hour to pay to a cameraman or an editor. So still till today, I'm building this crew. I'm pretty good right now. I have a lot of people, but film is like a family. Like it's out of a lot of people, and no matter who you are, director, producer, writer, you can't take the credit. If the movie wins something, that means everybody from makeup to wardrobe to everybody won, because we all put something into the film. It's not about one person. It's about respect and hard work. And it's like a family. I call it in-law family. Every film I directed, produced, it is kind of like one of my in-law families. And I still stay in touch with them when we work again and again on different films, and we are close. So that's very, very important to treat everybody like a family, no matter if you're a director or a PA or whatever.
Well, that's nice, because sometimes, you know, producers or directors will eat their young or whatever, you know what I mean? And it can be a rough go out there. And I'm glad to hear, you know, that you, like you said, you have a very humanistic point of view and treat everybody like a family. So, yeah, this is one of those things where you just weren't born with a gold spoon in your mouth. I mean, you literally worked your way up and have continued. You're right. Continue to work, yeah. and you've built a brand. So,
and you're right about some producers are mean. And I worked in 2007 with Michael Bay on his first Transformers, and I was like behind the scenes, behind camera. I was one of the back in the day, like PA starting into this, like getting to know how the big budgets work. And Michael Bay daily yelled. I was there for a week, yelled at me, like he was screaming and yelling, like move your ass or do something, you know. And some people are really, really, I don't know, mean or on drugs. I have no idea, but everything starts from everything starts from the art and from love. And you got to respect. I respect every person on set, so it's very important too. That's how you earn your own respect.
Exactly. Yeah. It's funny you talk about being on drugs. We've had and we've had coaches, and I've been exposed to this world of sober coaching and recovery coaching to keep actors and talent sober while they're on set filming. And as you know, there's an industry out there dedicated to that, of sober coaches that studios and others pay to have a safe set, particularly with union issues and concerns and having a sober, safe set. So that can be a challenge, it sounds like, sometimes.
I know. Right now, I'm producing a film. We just locked the picture today. Actually, I'm working on two films right now on the East Coast. That's why I'm here right now. But we just locked the picture for Away to Hope, Overcoming Heroin. So it's directed by a friend of mine, Josh Manning, and he was with me on the Beverly Hills Bandits, and we work in this. He's one of the guys that is on my team right now. We're trying to achieve a lot. But this hour and a half shows you, this is a true story. It shows you real people that have kids in the back and they are in the front seat. Parents, both parents are overdosed. And everything is documented, life, what's going on with our country right now over this heroin and drug addiction and all this. It's crazy. But film is going to do... It's going to touch a lot of hearts because people tell real stories. And as a producer, I watch this and I cry. And it's going to touch a lot of, hopefully it's going to help people realizing, see themselves from a side, how and what kind of position they put themselves and their children. And I have three kids and I can't imagine doing that to my own kids. But drug is taking over you. You can't think straight. So it's sadly, it's sad.
Yeah. Very
was
sad.
The movie Get Away to Hope? Is that what you said?
Yes. I sent it to Bruce a poster.
Yes, I'll get it out there. Right.
That's awesome.
He did get, and I put the Beverly Hills poster up because, well, on LinkedIn, all I could do was one, but I'll definitely I'll get the heroin this release up there after the show. You know, and one of the things I Vidley and I have had a chance to talk a little bit over the phone. He and I have been, you know, Facebook friends for years. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed about him, you know, you're such a family man. You know, you're always with your kids. I know there's a picture of you and your daughter. And, man, I just applaud that, man. You seem, you know, I don't want to say normal. But you know what I mean? That's a good thing, right? And you seem really connected with your family. And I applaud that, man. I mean, I just really do because you're really coming off to others as a normal person, and that means a lot. You know what I mean? I think to people like myself and others who are just like, wow, this guy is just a regular person. He's a dad, and you know, working on his craft and moving forward, and you know, not a lot of pretense. So I just wanted to say that about you, that I've just enjoyed our relationship and enjoyed, you know, what I've seen from you over the years on social media.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for being on 2007, one of my friends, looking for many years forward. And you said, I'm you know, I'm a humble man. I'm a Christian person. And number one is God, then it's my family, and then it's the industry. So I can move those things around. If sometimes I put my job first and my kids second, or God third, or something happens always. So I just try to keep that straight. I'm not saying I'm perfect, you know, we'll make mistakes, we have issues, but we need love, man. In this world, we need love, and we need to share a piece of love with everybody. That way people maybe won't do drugs, they will feel loved, and the people care about them. All this stuff starts from something, man, from a lot of stuff and bad stuff in this world. So we got to shy a little bit on this people, on this, no matter what you do, if you're directing or your father, or you're driving a car, man, it's crazy.
Well, and what's cool, Vitaly, is you have this great opportunity to carry that message in a big way. I love that. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, we capture an image that every image we capture, if you are a paint artist or let's say Picasso or somebody capture an image and he was maybe nobody at the time. He had maybe was a drunk, but then after he died years later, that image is still on there and people start appreciating that. Maybe at the moment when you capture that moment, either a beautiful actress or a beautiful film or a beautiful message. I always tell my actresses, I work with actors and actresses who are 16, 15, 14 years old, and I tell them, hey, this face, you're going to be a grandma one day and say, look, I did this film and look how beautiful I look back in the day. And this is part of the thing you live for your future generations, for everything. So it's film is, yeah, it's independent. Yeah, it could be Michael Bay film. It could pay $200 million, but we pour love into it. And, of course, it's whatever it is. Every movie I direct, I turn the page and move on. I'm not going back to it. It's just like another page of my life. And something we'll talk about this in a second, how the budgets affect and with big people I worked and the responses I got back. But, yeah, life is, you capture a moment, like you said. And you have that opportunity to with this Hope movie. I mean, you get to show some people how bad it is to be in that situation.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good that you just bring that human element not only to yourself and your family, but also to your work, and it just manifests itself out that way. So what I'd like to do is talk about being a director real quick. You know, couple of things. How you came to you know, I know you talked about being a PA, getting exposure on lots and projects and those things. But talk about the artistic process as it plays out for you, being a director, and what are some of the elements that you think. That you possess, you know what I mean, that are kind of unique to you and the way you direct a film. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit. I mean, I grew up in the USSR and old Russia back in the day when I was in kind of like a orphanage. I would call it right now a boarding school, but boarding school sounds very, very, I don't know, in America sounds
posh.
Like it's for rich people. But boarding school in Russia is if you don't have one parent or the other. So I was about 6 years old when my dad died. So my mom couldn't like send us to boarding school, me and my brother. So we went to boarding school. We got like abused and all this stuff. So we kind of like escaped that and run every day to cinema, watch a movie. Because this is every day. I would run from boarding school and watch same movie, like from 8-9 a.m. I would go between the people. I was only like 7-8 years old, between the people for free, because the movies would start back in that time at 9-8 a.m. And with last one would go 11 p.m. and I would watch that big screen with my eyes for the whole day, like same movie over and over. Because back in the day they had only one movie playing in the theater all the time.
And that was your escape.
Exactly. So I picture myself either was a Bollywood movie with the dancers and poor people on the streets and trying to achieve these big dreams and all these big things. I picture always myself then on that Hollywood street or on that Bollywood street. And I wasn't in that boarding school. I wasn't there. I was like happy kid. And I fell in love with this image cut after cut. Beautiful shots of dancers and Bollywood and all this. So that's how I kind of like. I think that's when went into my heart the first seed for love for Hollywood and image and picture and to be a director or something, or to create my own images or something. I always had that dream, and dreams come true. So, but like I said, the first time said it started in 2006 on Warner Brothers. I had this mafia story a little bit in my head, only 20 pages, and I approached one guy. I met a guy on the set on Warner Brothers. His name was George. And I say, George, I want to get you one of my crew. I'm recruiting actors from here and all this. Let's work on this. And he said, $800 an hour. And I said, dude, I mean, I can't afford. This is very low budget. The budget was like 10 grand or something like that. So it took me 3 weeks to convince him. And we started doing this. So we made that film. we made that film, and that's it. It was the first experience in LA to go to Malibu and film this film on the beach or Hollywood Boulevard or all this kind of. I had a beautiful actress from Paris, Monica Mall. She arrived just from Paris, and she agreed to be in the film. I'm not saying it was a great film. To me, again, it's just a capture of something, and it's sure. the first step. But the most important thing for filmmakers who are going to do today, I want to make a point for them, never just stop. I would rather you do, look, I directed a movie called Utoya Island, and it was about a Norwegian killer in Norway shooting 70 people, killing them there and all that stuff. So it was a bad movie. It was a hard movie. So when I directed that movie, I directed in Youngstown, Ohio, and I had a bunch of kids, like 80 kids, because there was a camp and killer was shooting people. So when I was directing that film, the Cinema Magazine was writing, and that was a low budget. Every country, like Paris, London, England, Queen of Norway emailed me to stop filming the film because it was like, well, it's too early, blah, 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 all this. But that's not the point. One of the articles or under the article, there was one comment saying, Spielberg directed Schindler's List, and he told his cast to be respectful and sad on the set. Vital Versace directed Utoya Island, and every actor, teenager, said they had fun making this movie. So hold on a second. I mean, okay, you can't compare me to Spielberg, first of all, because Spielberg is a great guy, big budget. And I got this from Newspace, from Fox, or from whatever TV station. These kids show up, 80, 90 kids there to be in this movie. Of course, they're excited. It's first time probably on a set. They're excited. What do you want? But that's not the point. What I'm trying to say, I compare myself, honestly, more to Roger Corman. I don't know if you know who's Roger Corman.
Right.
But not to Spielberg. Roger Corman made movies in 2 days. Bad movies, good movies. Some movies you can't even watch, but he at least did it. He did 500 films. There's nobody in Hollywood history who directed or produced 500 films. So just to be clear, man, I'm not a big director like Spielberg or Scorsese. I'm like Roger Corman, man. I make a film, I forget about the film, I move on, I want to make another one. And when I get enough budget to make something like Michael Bay, then we'll talk. But until then, when I make ultra low budget, you can't compare me. Please don't compare me to Spielberg or Michael Bay. I mean, it's the budget. I have 0.1% of their budget. So how can you compare me with 0.1%? I mean, it's the budget. It's ultra low budget. And we're making a film. Blue Ridge Project was a bad film, right? But it made $8 million. So we're trying to make something with what we have, and hopefully, my number one thing is for cast and crew to respect. Look, we just had a month ago at Warner Brothers premiere for The Beverly Hills Bandits. Every actor before premiere came and hugged me and said, oh, thank you, blah, 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 blah. But the most important comments were for me after the movie, like Natasha Alam, the main actress, came to me, hugged me after the premiere and said, thank you for having me in this movie. Because after you watch the movie and if you liked it, if they liked it, they were part of this and we all did this and everybody, number one for me, for them to enjoy it and love it. Then audience and critics after that. But if these people, I cannot make even these people happy, then there's something there. You know, we gotta first make, you know, the circle goes wider and wider, but you start from the center. So
your first client is your cast.
Well, I
making them happy.
Want them not,
yeah,
exactly. I don't want them to say, hey, Vitaly, I regret wasting a month of my life on this film.
Yeah.
I think I want them to be happy. Like, whoa, I'm proud to be part of the film, you know? So normally 99.9% with everybody I work, and then we hug and say good luck, and I would love to have you back. There's one black sheep once in a while, once in 5 years, that are disrespectful to somebody or something that we have to rub the shoulders. But normally, I'm pretty easy person to work with. I respect people, love people, care about people, and you know, most of the people that work with me, they will tell you, you know, what we do. We just start with respect, and that's it. No matter who you are, like I said before, a PA or makeup artist. I mean. And I started with some makeup artist 10 years ago, and I flew a makeup artist from Puerto Rico for this film because she's in Puerto Rico now, and she started with me 10 years ago. How can I not get her on this film if she wanted to be? I mean, we got to just remember good stuff you know, that people did for us. Mostly, mm-hmm. most of the time, people remember just the bad stuff if somebody did something bad to them.
Wow, that's interesting. Jenny, what a great observation, right? He's so, you know, that's really great that you're person-centered and cast-centered and you're really taking care of your crew and not taking care of them, but at least showing, you know, like you said, very genuine care and concern, and it's a very personal touch. And mm-hmm. and man, how refreshing. I know that's got to be. Like you said, every once in a while you get a black sheep or somebody just doesn't quite fit in or maybe has a different agenda and goes, you know, goes another way. That's understandable. How do you have people give you scripts and you pick one, or you have other investors that are giving you ideas and you're directing, or tell me how you, like, because like you said, these films are like photos in a photo album, right? It's done, you yeah. shoot it, you move on to the next film. How do you look for new films? How does that come to you?
Bruce, every film is different, starting from the first film to the last film. Yep. There's films that the investors come with to me with the money already in the film. There's uh-huh. films I get always in my email inbox. I get like 20, 30 films a week. And there's different type of, and there's ideas and stories that I have in my head that I just tell people to write it for me. So every script is different. Like, for example, let's start with one film, the vampire movie. I shot a vampire movie in 2009. And in 2008, I worked with Mark Thompson in L.A. On a 2013 movie, big movie. This is a very good example for people who have an idea, and people, you got to be able to take criticism very well. If you don't take criticism well, you're just going to give up. You just drop your hands down and you're not going to want to do anything. So I worked on 2013 movie, $5 million budget, shot in downtown Los Angeles with the Thousand Oaks production company. Mark Thompson, Terry Polo, all these people were in that film. I worked for 30 days on that film, and I got to know everybody, and the pay was like $6,000 for those 30 days. It wasn't much, big salary, but it was an experience that I was learning. So I got to know these people. I worked with them, and then I offered them a film that I was working on. So it was The Deception, I think. It was shot in Beverly Hills, like supermodels, blah, blah. It was $10,000 film. It was a cheap film. And Mark said to me something, you know what, this is a bad film. I cannot distribute this one, blah, 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 through their production company. So I say, yeah, it's fine. No hard feelings. Thanks for, taking a look, blah, blah, blah. So then I shot this film. After we shot 2013, I shot this movie, The Vampire, Last Vampire on Earth. So I sent him a copy. And I said, hey, guys, can you check it out, this, if you want to distribute it? Because I know you better. I already got offers, but I want to go with you guys because I know you better. So they watched the movie, and they said, to be honest with you, it's a shitty film. It's not something that we would distribute. They said, that's fine. But what happens to 2013, man? We see, I worked 30 days on it. You spent $5 million. Oh, this movie is way too big for our production company to distribute, because they distribute films too. So they said, we'll look for somebody bigger to distribute. So I said, okay, cool. So three months later, I walk into Kmart or Best Buy, I don't remember, because the movie was Walmart, Kmart, and Best Buy. The vampire movie got distributed. So I bought from every store that I just mentioned a copy for myself, for my own records. But I walk into the store, and on the shelf, there's my movie got distributed in five different packages, okay? But what caught my eye is the number one package. They had eight movies by eight directors. So the top number one was The Last Vampire on Earth. It was $15,000 budget that I shot. And right in the center, it was 2013, the $5 million budget. It was packaged by Echo Bridge Distribution, a billion-dollar industry company. It was packaged, the eight movies, ranging from $1 million to $5 million, plus that $15,000 movie in the corner, which was the vampire movie. So just to tell to your audience, I mean, if somebody tells it's a shitty movie, I mean, it's fine. It's yes, because you had $50,000, you didn't have $5 million. But in the end of the day, that movie with $5 million made as much money as that $15,000 movie, because it got distributed together as a package. So it's true. I mean, you work with what you got, and you let the, you know, this river of life or entertainment take it wherever it goes. Like I mentioned earlier, Blue Ridge Project was $7,000, made so much money. I mean, millions of dollars. So you never know. You just got to capture that image and let the judge, the audience, never. Same thing happened with The Deception before that. I offered a couple of distributions. They said it's not a good movie, blah, blah, blah. And I knew the script was bad, just supermodels. It's like, so first year, I give it to somebody in L.A. who run a YouTube company. I give them the movie. First year, 13 million views. So the movie went like crazy. At least it got the views. I have friends that made a movie 10 years ago. They still hold it in their basement. I don't hold the movie hostage. You got to let it go. You got to release it and let it go.
Let it go, baby.
Judge them. Yeah, look at this movie, The Room, right now. The guy made it a bad movie. Exactly. He spent same thing, $5 million, $3 million, $4 million. I don't know how much he spent. And now, after how many years later, they made a big budget movie about that movie. So, yeah, make a shitty movie. At least make something. Don't be like... And the critic's gonna try to bring you down, man, all the time. And this industry, if you cannot handle critics, you just like in a very bad situation. I mean, you have to. Before I called you, I was watching De Niro talking about reading his critics, what they write, and responding to all of them. And I post on my Facebook. You gotta see what De Niro says, you know, because what bad things they write about De Niro, about his nose, about his this, about his. These people have nothing else to do. They just wanna bring you down, and it's normal. I mean, successful people get up very slowly because a lot of non-successful people trying to choke them, struggle them. So get your way through. And one day that shitty movie is going to end up next to Michael Bay movie. So don't worry about that. Just do your job and don't pay attention. And that's for your audience who's trying to direct a movie right now. Don't ever let anybody stop you. Go for it.
What an inspiring, message, because I know there's a lot of people in the coaching business. Jenny and I are both life coaches and executive coaches and whatever. And a lot of people are their own harshest critic, right? They have their own self-limiting thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, shit. I mean, if I was in a Russian boarding school, I'd be just like you, man. I'm moving. You know what
I'm
I mean?
I'm gonna escape.
Yeah, man, I'm not looking back, so I don't have any of this weird American neurosis to hold me back or whatever, right, in terms of self-doubt. I really like, I really like your ability just to kind of execute, hit the ground. And like you said, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And at the end of the day, it is what it is. You know, people said that to me when I started this show several years ago. What are you going to do on LA Talk Radio? You're from Texas. I'm actually in Dallas, Texas.
So am I.
So is Jenny. Why are you doing it out there? This and that. Next thing you know, we have guests on the show and we're on iTunes and our metrics are picked. You know what I mean? So I like it because I'm resonating with a lot of what you said, because I've gotten out there and put myself out there, in an environment where other critics were kind of turning their nose up. So I love to hear that story, how your $15,000 film was packaged with that 213. Real quick, did you have any mentors or coaches or anybody in your life that have helped you with your vision and decision making and your business acumen, or is that something you just kind of through the school of hard knocks and your own God-given insight? Anybody you would look?
Well, it's a little bit of both, like you said, God's insight. And but let's start with the school you just said about. What did he teach me? All that hate and that from the teachers, from principal, from everybody at that boarding school is to love more. That's about the school. That's all I'll say about that.
Okay.
But the mentors about. I watched this Bollywood movie. I said this many times. There was a guy named Mithun Chakraborty in Bollywood. He was one of my mentors. And then, of course, Roger Corman. Because I was thinking, man, how can you make a movie in 2 days and have it played in every theater in the United States? So this was like something possible. Because if you tell me or a lot of people right now, well, there's a big dreamers. There's a big people who dream big, of course. But if you tell anybody right now in L.A. that, yeah, tomorrow or next month you'll get $200 million like Michael Bay budget and you can make this 3D CGI movie, whatever. they're not going to believe it. But when you tell somebody, look, this guy right here made 500 films. He directed, produced it across the country. And some of them, he made it in 2 days. That's just like, to tell you something. Listen, if this guy did it, why I cannot do it? I mean, I should do it. I mean, this guy, I mean, and you have to know his story. He started at the Paramount Pictures, the mailman. He was dropping the mail as a mail kid. And then he started reviewing the script, and he didn't just become like a director overnight. But then at that time, it was like very hard to make movies, but he did it in 2 days. Like all this, you know, with the, he found Jack Nicholson, he found Scorsese, he discovered all these people. Him did it. This guy who made shitty movies under $1 million. If you would ask Roger Corman, can you spend more than $1 million? He said, that makes no sense for me to invest in a movie more than $1 million. I can make it cheaper.
So guy, that's great. Mean,
that's the guy who was my number one mentor, plus me, Twin Chakraborty, was a Bollywood actor. And I looked up to these guys, and I saw myself on those streets or in those pictures or taking those pictures myself. And it came true. I was in, at that moment when I was watching that screen, there was no chance back in the day with the communism and all that I will be in Hollywood. There was no chance. It was just a dream. And it just actually happened not long after that. So,
well, talk a little bit more about the Bollywood influence. What was the mentor in Bollywood? What was it that person brought to you?
So the first film I watched with him, he's a very good director. I watched with him being a little kid, sleeping on the streets and eating food from the streets and becoming this hero on the street. This is Bollywood, dancing, always making you happy, smile. So sometimes when my teacher would, my nose would bleed because the teacher would beat me when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old, or 9 or 10. Sometimes I would escape the school, run from school and sleep under the trees or like on the sidewalks or sleep in the attics or everywhere, whatever I could sleep as a kid. Sometimes it was winter, Russia, winter is tough a little bit. So I looked at that guy sleeping on Indian street there with the monkeys and just like getting a monkey and train her how to, you know, perform for people, making money and becoming successful, whatever he was doing. That's what kind of like I was looking. Look, I'm that kid on the street. I'm that person right there. And I'll achieve what this guy achieved, you know, Malibu Home or Beverly Hills Home or direct a movie or win an Oscar. But I have steps, man. And I have 10 steps and I'm right now on a step like 7. So I still have steps to get to my final dream. So I'm still going up the steps.
Wow.
But
you're
not by myself. I could have done this without a lot of people. So, you know, one of the first steps was for me was to make a movie was done. Then it was a step to get worldwide distribution. That was another step. It was done. Worldwide distribution. I got it Australia, everywhere. The vampire movie got distributed on 5 different packages with a lot of directors, a lot of films. So it got, so slowly, little by little achieved, you know, it's few, but everything I just said, it's impossible to do on your own. Even the last one is going to be to win an Oscar. So that cannot be done without every crew member on that team. And that team is not even probably formed together yet completed. So I'm still working on that. So, but it's not tomorrow. It's a life achievement thing. If it's going to happen in 20 years, I'll thank God and I'll say a nice speech and move on. I'm not pushing. I'm not rushing anything. Everything goes, even our meeting today, our conversation is meant to be. So it might touch somebody, might change somebody's life. It's everything. It's the ball is rolling and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. And we're thankful for you to come on the show. And plus, you know, we'll be on archived on the LA Talk Radio site. And also, you'll be on iTunes. This show will be on iTunes here in about several days post show, and that way you can always refer to it. And it's good because, like you said, this is an interesting, like a snapshot in time of where you are today, and you know where you want to be going with your goals and what you've accomplished, and to do that with a sense of integrity. And kind of want to say lone wolf because you've had others with you, of course. But man, I like you a lot, man. I like you a lot more than I did when I started. No, kidding. I didn't know you when I started the show too much today, but wow, I mean, I'm just really impressed with the clarity. You know what I mean? I just love to hear your clarity and steadfast and your persistence and your diligence, man. I mean, I'm just, I really applaud that. And that's what I'm really picking up on. And I think it's going to continue. Like Thanks. You said, I think, yeah, you're welcome. But I think it's a fantastic formula when you combine that kind of a work ethic alongside humanistic, right? Treating people with respect and dignity and this and that. I think that's really good. Let me ask you a couple of questions about the artistic side of you. How would you describe your artistic side?
Okay, so this is I'm been always artistic and very crazy about architectural video or anything. So, for example, when I was 22 years old, I bought my first house, and I just ripped the doors and put balconies and changed completely artistic way of my vision of the house. Then second house and third house and blah blah blah. So I'm on the move to change something, artistically, like my ceiling could have a 16 chapel because I like that artistic point of view of it. Some people might say, hey, this is too much, but it's my view, it's my artistic view. And the film, same thing. I just always liked my own style, my own things, man. I mean, everybody has his own artistic view. It all starts, if I walk into your office or your house, I can tell what kind of style you have, what kind of design, what do you like. Even the way you dress, you show up, I can tell what kind of person you are, what kind of style you like. You know, you're a hippie, you're a clean cut, you're a business. What do you like? How you like? Same thing with the films. You watch the first film, second film. And again, I said, you have to remember every film is based on budget. Let me tell you what affects the artistic point of view. I'll explain in a few words. Let's pick up right now the Beverly Hills Bandit. It was executive produced by Eric Roberts, Eliza Roberts, Greg Williams, and me. I had great actors. Natasha Alam, Eric played a small part as a detective. Ron Jeremy. It was a great cast. Union movie, SAG movie. It was a casting union movie. And let me tell you something. This budget of this film, of course, I did whatever I could. But I'll tell you, if I take, not Michael Bay, because Michael Bay spends way too much money, but let's say we take a movie like this guy that just made The Room, or $20 million budget, it's low budget considered for SAG. So let's say a $20 million budget movie that was just made right now, and let's say Daddy's Home 2 right now, right? Mm-hmm. So Daddy's Home 2 was in theaters right now, was made, directed, produced, and everything. Whatever Michael Bay or this guy on this Daddy's Home 2 spent on catering for one day, okay, to feed the cast and crew. Like when I worked with Michael Bay, he had 3-4 coolers of just Red Bull. And then we had shrimps, we had salmon, we had, you know, big cast crew is very expensive catering. So whatever Michael Bay or big Daddy's Home 2, they spent on one day just for catering. That was my whole budget for the whole film. And I have to tell you something. I had to hire a Beverly Hills catering company to feed my cast too. So what I'm saying here, man, I'm getting one day of catering any production company in Hollywood, big production company, one catering, whatever they spend, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say they spend $50,000 on that one day or less, or $30,000. Okay, I took that money. I hire a catering company to feed all my actors. They brought coolers. They brought warm food. They had a couple of Spanish people there feeding everybody. Okay, so I brought that, feed my cast, my crew, hire and pay some actors $1,000 a day. An hour. Some people I pay $500 a day. So every cast member got paid. Everybody got, every crew member. I flew people from Puerto Rico, makeup artists, everything. So with that one day of that catering, I hire a catering company, I hire an editor, I hire the whole equipment, I hire by state of California, I had to have a teacher, paid $350 a day just to keep an eye on teachers because they cannot work on kids because they cannot work more than 6 hours. So with all that money that I got from one day of catering, I made another movie that was premiered at Warner Brothers. For red carpet premiere for cast and crew and family and friends. It's not distributed yet. So just now you see the point. I took one day over there just food. I'm not talking about paying anybody. Just for catering company budget, they had for one day. Right. And I, with that same money, I hired my own catering company, real company. Not that I didn't go to Walmart buy food. I hire people who feed my actors, who for 2 weeks we made movies, drove to, because we shot between Beverly Hills and San Diego, drove back and forth. So you have to imagine my style and my thing is in within that budget. Of course, I had to rent a Maserati. I had to put my main actor, because he played the producer, the father of the kids. He had to drive a Maserati and all this stuff. So you have to imagine this now. I mean, I wish I had more money to make my style, to expand my things, but I worked with what I had and I achieved it. I finished, and then everybody applauded and said, great job, thank you. And this is not just for me. I mean, editor has to take time away from kids, day and night edit, composer, everybody. I mean, I told you, from PA to me, this is about everybody. Everybody had took a brush and had a spot on that painting, on that picture. And
you're maximizing resources.
You are, but you're working with, you have to remember, this is SAG. I had to pay pension for every actor who's union to SAG. SAG got the pension, got to hold 20% of my budget that I had very little budget, very little. I told you, it's 1% of whatever they would spend on food one day. So, and this SAG took 20% to hold, to pay the pension to actors and all this stuff. That's union. I mean, you can't avoid that. That's why, I don't know, sometimes I feel like they're squeezing independents in the corner, man. You get $30,000, $50,000 to make a movie or $100,000, and then all this, they slap you with all this, a teacher on set for $350. There's things that you don't even imagine that you have to have. And by law or by SAG regulations, you have to have. So same thing with 213. At the end of the day, they had, I think, $100,000 in penalties. Because they didn't pay the mileage and they didn't pay this to actors and this and this. So the union is great, is good, but sometimes independent is about who's next to you, man. And I'm glad that this film was less stress. I never had less stress movie ever directed, produced it like this one. Everybody was really like a family. So
that's really cool. I'll tell you what strikes me, Vitaly, in listening to your story is that, you know, Bruce and I make a living on helping people understand and have the awareness that they have control of their mindset and their decisions. And you had that from a young age. You had to figure that out at a very young age, that you were in charge of your mindset. You had an imagination, and then you can make that what you imagine come true. And that's what we spend our time. So we make a living helping people with that.
It's true. And the most important thing, you could lose, I could lose a house, I could lose the cars, I could lose everything. But a movie or a project that you did, you can never lose them. Like Roger Corman, he could lose everything. He can be a homeless guy on the street, but from 500 movies, every movie's up there. And it's like an investment. It's like a legacy or something
legacy,
that you're leaving behind. Yeah, you're living behind, and that's the best thing. No chief can steal that from you. Nobody can take away that from you, you know. Mm-hmm. And I worked on one film. I had a bad experience one day, but about the stealing the credit, I just want to tell you something. I worked on one film, and I got a friend of mine. I'm not going to mention names. He was director, and I was producing, executive producing everything. So we wrapped the movie, and the last day of the film, he lost his iPhone, so he couldn't find it. So he started yelling at me, like, dude, you're responsible for my phone, blah, blah, blah. Where's my phone? Not one of the cast members stole my iPhone. So he was yelling, screaming at me, and I said, calm down, dude. We'll find it or something. So he was still upset, screaming. The last words was, I'm taking your executive producer credit away from you. So, and up like this, he distributed the movie. He released the movie without my name. And remove it because he was upset. And then it took him 2 years to calm down and everything, and go back in editing and put my name back in a movie. So some people's attitude or bitterness or whatever, they can do something. Like sometimes they don't even realize what they're doing, but it's life. I mean, it's work. You get lucky, work with right people.
So, yeah.
And I wish I can work with you guys one day. I mean, with Bruce or something. I mean, I wish I could have you guys on the set. Maybe I'll film in Texas, or maybe you're going to come to LA, or...
Oh, we'll come.
Yeah, we'll be there. You just let us know.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I'll let you know. I'll definitely invite you.
I'll
definitely have a part for you guys.
You're an inspiration for the regular people. You know, you really are. I mean, just hearing your background as being just your extreme childhood and then probably a fairly middle class teenage years, and you have this amazing perspective that you're in charge of your life. You're in charge of the story of your life, and you get to help others.
Let me tell you the best feeling I get always when a mother comes to me and said, you had my daughter, my son, this film, and you have no idea how happy they were when they came home and how much you influenced them. And that's the best thing you can hear when somebody says, where I had a call from Russia, I made a cancer movie, and they called me, it was in English, and they watched it in Russian, and I got a text message saying, we had tears in our eyes watching this movie. We didn't even understood the movie, but we were crying through the whole movie.
Oh.
So because it was in English and they didn't speak English. But the thing is, man, it's what makes you, you know, right now we're making, I love drama. My favorite thing, because I grew up as a kid, is a drama. So drama is my favorite movie to watch, not to make. But we make everything. Right now I'm filming, as we speak right now, we filming The Worst Christmas Ever. It's by John Ciccatelli, directed, and I'm
producing. Oh, I probably live that one. No.
I love the art on that too. I saw the art on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really catchy.
Cool. Yeah.
It's coming soon. It's a comedy, dirty comedy, shot here in snow and all this stuff. But this is, see, every movie, like this movie is going to make people laugh. The other movie that Josh directed with The Hope is going to touch people. So everything. But number one thing, man, I mean, it's the teamwork. And like I said, I flew a person from Puerto Rico. I could hire anybody in LA to do my makeup, but because that person worked on my such a low budget films, I could not bring her on this union project, because she put up with me through so much, through so such a low budget, like Utoya Island and all this, all of her and all the films that I couldn't. Same thing with this film, The Beverly Hills Bandit. I had the script was written for Sasha Colas as a musician to perform in a movie, because I used her music many times, but she was on tour in Russia and she couldn't make it. So I called the writer and I said, can you rewrite for another? So we had Tekla Waterfield, very good musician from Seattle, Washington. She flew in, we put her in like a suite hotel and everything. I had amazing Greg Williams is amazing executive producer, and of course Eric and everybody, but we had an amazing team, man. And we looked at people. I mostly looked at people who I feel like I owe them for something. Like, because if you with me, like now I feel like I owe you something. You know what I mean? I'm just saying inside, I feel like by recognizing my work, by feeling, making me feel great and let me speak my point of view of this, I feel like people need to, I mean, we are in each other's, like, not for, there's a reason. That's the main thing. So, I mean, I'm looking forward for many, many years with you guys. I'll let you speak.
Well, we're down to 3 minutes, man, and we're going to have to get you back on the show again. You know?
We got to get you back, yeah.
I mean, my God, you know what I mean? It's just,
we're going to have to extend your contract.
Yeah, my gosh.
Get you guys some tickets for premieres. I wish I could invite you to this Warner Brothers that we just had, but I'll invite you to some events or to come to the set. I'll find you a reporter part or whatever. We'll have to have a cup of coffee and just, I would love to shake your hand, guys. And thank you so much for this. I mean, we gotta make people, there's so many negative news and so many people that's trying to bring people down, that I'm glad that you guys are doing this for independent filmmakers who maybe we lift up somebody right now.
Spreading
maybe
the love.
They were thinking. Yeah, maybe they were thinking, no, I cannot do this, man.
Yeah.
They let them look at me or Roger Corman say, yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Yes.
And I will. Thanks to Bruce and thanks to you guys for this show. I mean,
thank you, Vitaly.
It's going to touch somebody.
It's been awesome. We got to have you back.
Thank you. I'm looking forward for many years with you guys, you know, for listening to your show, and good luck with everything. I wish you happy new year to you and all your audience who listen. And don't give up, man. Just hit your dream. And remember, it starts from within you. Love, respect, and what goes around comes around, man.
All right. All
right. Okay, we got to have you back on.
Yeah, perfect way to end the show. Thanks for coming on today. Yeah, I'm definitely going to give you a buzz here later on tonight. You know me, I'm always PMing you on Facebook, so I'm glad to have that capability.
Thank you.
You always pick up. Yeah, God bless you. Well, folks, another fantastic show.
Awesome.
I'm going to listen to this show. I don't know about you, Jeannie. I'm going to download
I'm going to listen to it again. And it's a great message for all of us.
Yeah, man. And a guy who just walks. Yeah, he just walks it, lives it, and he just does it unabashed, man. I just love that, man. I just feel like 10 feet tall right now. I think I need to break something or something right now. But,
karate.
So good. No, man, just really good. Just so good to have him on the show. We're going to definitely get him back on for when he has future projects. And, man, thanks again for coming on the show. And, folks, you're going to want to download this show and the other shows, but on our iTunes site, so Concierge Coaches Show on iTunes. Also, the shows are archived on the LA Talk Radio. We're at latalkradio.com/content/concierge-coaches-show. It's all Googleable. See us on our Facebook page. I can be reached at Cameron Coaches on Twitter and conciergecoach.net. And Jeannie, how can folks reach you?
I can be reached at jhubconsulting.com.
Awesome. Well, let me go break something down here. We'll see
Happy New Year, everyone.
What a great way to start, Bruce. Yes, and we'll see y'all next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. See you then.
Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.